This is Dave Seibold, and the date is March 31st, 1989. And the interview that we're going to hear on this tape is with Olive Harbeck, Mrs. Eugene Harbeck. And we did the interview at her home at 547 Slayton, a home that they've lived in for a number of years, I suspect 50 years. Olive was born in Long Island and lived in New Jersey. Arrived here in 1910 with her family, the William Hatton family. And of course, William Hatton became very instrumental in the Eagle Ottawa leather business and made it a great business that it still is today. Olive and her sister Kathy attended the private school, Akeley Hall, when they arrived here. And as you'll hear, until they went on to college. Now, she wanted to make sure that I knew it was Akeley Hall and not Akeley Institute, and she's absolutely right. When she arrived here, it was Akeley Hall. But it had been known originally back in 1888 as Akeley Institute, and then they changed the name to Akeley Hall for academy reasons, I suspect, later on. She also had a brother, Julian, and he attended a school, perhaps a public school for a time. But the topic of this tape is Akeley Hall, so let's pick up the interview.
I always lived in the city. It was always macadam, or else clamshell, which are hard, you know. So we took the interurban from Grand Avenue, and we got to Coopersville. I said to my mother, when are we going to go underground? I thought we were going to come down to the subway.
Okay. You were from New York?
Then? Yeah. I was born in Long Island. I lived in New Jersey, in summer in New York. So anyway, Father, we got in a Carrillo, and we went down to set. Now, he never had a lesson driving a car. The man doing the car turned on and off, that's all. And hardly anyone running. Anyway, went down. We didn't stop any place because we couldn't. So we went up to the post office, which was where the bank is, that building.
Yes, right. The federal building.
We went up over the curb and right to the steps of the bank, and that's where the post office, and that's where the car stopped. And someone came and drove us home.
Well, how had you gotten the car out here? How had the car gotten out here?
But he bought it. Oh, he didn't have it in the East. Didn't have it in the East because in the East, when you went to the, we see, I live in New Jersey, and we're in the East, sorry. When you went to the train, which you did all the time to go to the city, you can go to Hoboken, go through the tunnel and all,
sure,
get in Manhattan.
Yes.
No one had one person, I think, ever had a car in those days in East Orange, because there were so many cabs. So
sure.
This was our first car we ever owned. And soon after that, always added, my father had a chauffeur. He just could not do anything like that. I mean, he just went beyond him. It was driving a car.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't that good about his hands at all.
Isn't that something?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You'd have thought, I don't know why, but being in the manufacturing business, you would just assume that
he never, strangely enough, you know, usually nowadays when you're going to go into business, you go out in the factory and learn how the things are made.
Yes.
He never worked a day in the factory. They used to say he used to walk out in the factory and they could tell the way his cigar was still whether he was mad or not. But he would walk through. No, he never had any experience that way. Unlike what you're supposed to do. Unlike my brother, he worked through the 10 years when he did the two. But my father didn't.
Yeah. You know, we're hearing a sound that is quite unusual. The sirens.
What does that mean?
Don't know. It could be a test.
Is there anybody to call up?
Well, if the roof comes off, we'll know what it was about. Say, before we get started on the Akeley Hall, would you straighten out the Central School during the early 1900s? It was Central School was it.
Well, is you see, now remember, I didn't come here in 1910, 1911.
Okay.
And at that time, Central School, and I never went to private school. Public school.
Oh, you didn't?
My brother did, but no, he didn't. I have to explain a little bit, and this doesn't have to be on tape, but when my father, I have to talk about my father a little bit to get a little background of all this.
Sure.
Happened. When he was born in Ireland, Southern Ireland, down by Ireland, and he won a scholarship to a church school when he was 12 years old. And he went away to school, and then he always felt, and then he went on to London, where he took courses at night, and anyway, that's where he got his education in the church school. And he always felt so grateful to the church for his education, that when he came here, there was an Episcopal school here, Akeley Hall. So that's where we went.
I see.
And Julian went a year to, and funny, I looked at, because Gene told me, my father said to Gene's father, don't you think we ought to send Julian and Gene to the skiing in the school, because he was used to a city, and he seemed to get him, he seemed so small. Well, he didn't, but Julian went to Howe Military School, my brother.
Oh, I see.
He went here for a couple of years, then he went to Howe. And before he went to Harvard. Well, anyway, that's another story.
So now you called him Julian.
My brother.
Uh-huh.
My brother.
Now, was it, there was a William the Second?
Well, no, but, all right, that's my, my brother had three children. Bill, named for his father, and Julian, a junior, and then Harry, three Hatton boys.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
And so when my father came here and found him in the church school here, he was delighted. So that's where we went. So Kathy and I never went to any other school in town except Akeley before we went to college. Mm-hmm. That's how that happened.
I see.
In my history of Grand Haven, I mean, not my history of Grand Haven, history of Episcopal Church.
Oh.
None of this is for tape, but I just have to read just a little bit of background here. I just looked this up last night because. Gives me, and I think there's one of these that
well, hopefully we have it in the museum.
I would think so.
Also, the other place it may be is in the local history room of the library.
Yes, maybe. You know, my sources for this were sparse because in the early days, you see, St. John's had never been a wealthy church. Well, not that I'm proud, but we feel we've had quite an impact on the community, even though it would have been small.
Mm-hmm.
Many things have been borrowed from there. I can't say it, but it has had an impact. Both
sure.
Always been small and poor.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it hasn't been really poor, but it's...
Well, it has been poor, though.
Yeah. Has it?
Yes, it's never been a rich church.
Uh-huh.
You come into a town where most people are Dutch.
Yes.
Or they're Reformed. And if they... A lot of people left the Reformed Church and went to Presbyterian Church. See, that's a lot of their heritage.
Uh-huh.
A whole group of them who left the Second Reformed Church and went to Presbyterian, sometimes 60 people went, oh, well, that was when they went to Presbyterian, the Christ Community. But there was a whole group like... Courtney Wagner used to go to the Second Reformed Church. Then they moved to the Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But people are kind of, some people are kind of scared because they're afraid about the Catholic Church, you see.
Yes.
That they're timid about it.
I know what you mean. Right.
But anyway. Now, Dr. Wilkinson and Mrs. Wilkinson were, he was the rector of our church before we moved to Grand Haven. They were very highly regarded in the community by everybody. And when they retired, they came back here. But during the time he was rector, Akeley was quite, he was the first principal of Akeley Hall. Now let's read this paragraph. April of 1888 brought Dr. and Mrs. James E. Wilkins from St. John's, and their arrival was to mean much to the parish and the Grand Haven. Mr. H.C. Akeley, a prominent lumberman, had offered several lots in his home to the Presbyterian Church as a memorial to his daughter Blanche, recently deceased. They did not accept the gift, and was then given the diocese in 1887. The diocesan convention formally accepted the property and appointed Mrs. Wilkinson principal, Dr. Wilkinson chaplain. See, the Presbyterian Church, no church in town, has a reputation as a national church of running boarding schools.
Mm-hmm.
But the Episcopal Church is rotten, even though all over the school. They're all the private schools in this country are Episcopal based in their beginning.
Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And all of them that you can think of. Deerfield, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So this was more accepted, more understood this more, this idea, mm-hmm. than anybody else would in time. They wouldn't know how to start a school because they wouldn't have had some input. I sound so bragging, I don't mean
no,
to brag.
No, that's the history of it.
That's the truth of it.
Yeah.
And the Presbyterians wouldn't have known what to do with that. They didn't have a history of that. Anyway, the Avery Mansion, valued at $47,000, was named Blanche Paul in memory of the young child. And the diocese set about raising funds to run and endow the school. Names familiar in Grand Haven in these years appear in the list of trustees. George W. McBride, who lived in that gray house that's going to be moved, and it was terrible on Franklin Street. That was when I came.
Oh, yes.
Or
okay.
else he lived the house, maybe he lived in that little one next, I forgot, but anyway, that's what it is.
Across from the... the court of the,
well,
the sheriff's office.
Before my time, Thomas A. Parrish, Dwight Cutler, William P. Savage, well, I know Mr. Savage. Mm-hmm. The school named Akeley Hall opened in September 1888 with 11 boarding pupils, 40 day and music pupils, and 5 resident teachers. By 1890, the school had reached its capacity as a boarding school, and Bishop Gillespie generously erected a new building as a memorial to his wife, son, and daughter to be called Lathrop Hall after his wife's maiden name. However, the new addition was popularly known as the Gillespie Hall. It housed 50 additional boarders, a dining room, kitchen, an assembly room on the first floor, a gymnasium on the third, as well as St. George's Chapel. Later, the Slayton House on the property became St. Margaret's House and served as a music house with rooms above for the younger children. Miss Rebecca L. Richmond, the Grand Abbess, established 2 lectureships and furnished the domestic science department. Several churches throughout the diocese sent awards and gifts, as well as answering appeals for funds to operate the school. Bishop Gillespie personally advanced money when it was needed. By 1897, $40,000 had been spent on the school to make it the fine institution it was. A great deal of credit for Akeley's success is due, of course, to Wilkinson. Both were cultured and intelligent people, educated in the liberal arts, and their contribution to the school and to Grand Haven cannot be easily measured. And that's true. Dr. Wilkinson, they were probably the best educated people in Grand Haven.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Wilson, they lived up on the hill on 2nd Street Hill, and all the neighbors, I've got some other people, Peg Kirkland, who's talked about Peg Johnson, they had in front of a Bible class. And Peg Kirkland Johnson had become a Christian Scientist, and Peg told me she, if Dr. Wilson had married him, she dearly admired him and loved him. And he, in this class, it was a Bible class, of course, before nothing. He would say, it's people who know nothing who start these strange religions. And he would I can't think of it. Yeah, Christian Science Company,
Oh, sure. Mary Baker Eddy.
Boston. Great deal of credit. Through Mrs. Wilkins, university extension courses were arranged, and the town responded appreciation to those and other events geared to meet needs of the school and our friends. Akeley Hall, regular girls attended chapel daily at St. George's, but suddenly found them marching 2x2 into St. John's, and their presence never failed to add interest to the congregation. Meanwhile...
Now, was that during your day, too?
Yes.
It was continued?
I was not a boarding pupil, so I was my family. I was, you, Kathy, and I were day pupils.
I see.
Meanwhile, Dr. Wilkinson was busy with his duties of rector. He introduced the Christmas Eve celebration, and because there were no other services at that particular time in Grand Haven, the church was always packed. And he said there was no such thing as a Christmas Eve service.
Mm.
A lot of people St. Patrick's used to come to our church because they suspended it because so many people had gone there to Mass and were drunk. He invited outside speakers, often laymen, to the Wednesday night services, and introduced it to a Good Friday 3-hour service, the first in the diocese, a vested choir of boys and girls were also started. Now, then this goes on, this is all about our church.
Uh-huh.
And
you wrote that?
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, how long ago did you write that? Oh, so it has been, going on 30 years ago.
you know, when Doris Timberlake was here.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, and then the back here, I had memorial gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a beautiful memorial book over at our church in the narthex with people that they're given, that things are given. And so I guess that's... And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying it's a great thing, because it isn't, because I did what I could.
Oh, no.
Because we had very primitive ways of preserving records and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Strong ground. Since then, we've found a whole bunch of records that we didn't have at the time.
Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, that's a little background about that.
Well, yes.
So anyway... No,
you were here in 1910. And by then the school was in full bloom, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, it was. And are on an iron tape now?
Yes.
Oh,
right.
Lord, was I on a tape all that
sure.
time?
Sure.
Oh, I didn't
oh, yes.
know that.
Well, that's
I didn't know
we're
that.
Just good at chat.
That's unfair. I didn't know that. No. Well, we were, Kathy and I, and Helen Huddy, who lived down Franklin Street, right back of where Reichardt's is, Huddy and her grandmother, the Squire, those old Grand Haven families. She was a local pupil, and Virginia Rose, who lived here for a while, but by and large, there were no other, none of the girls were from Grand Haven. We wore uniforms, midi blouses, which when Lopix used to make, where Oaks is now, they had a factory, mm-hmm. they made the midi blouses and skirts, which we wore, the school navy blue third one in the wintertime, and then white ones for the summertime, and then white and mini blouses for Sundays. The girls always took a walk every afternoon. They used to go Saturday afternoon, then the Cherokees changed to Monday, had the holiday off on Monday instead of Saturday, because the boys bothered them so, and they, so she thought when they went out on Saturday. And the girls at Akeley were just the acme of perfection for the boys in town who didn't know them. They were just almost as if they were cloistered nuns, which of course they weren't.
Sure.
But to catch a glimpse of the Acre girls or slip them a note under the bushes in Central Park when the girls would... they would go out after breakfast every morning and walk through Central Park. And the boys would leave notes there. Or sometimes the girls... There was the Gillespie Hall with a big building. There are pictures of it down in the museum. And
yeah, that was a big. That was
a big. Mammoth. Yes, it was the whole, almost the whole block.
Yeah. Now, the front side that we would.
Well, that's Washington. Where the Leslie Hall is. That's where the senior house.
Okay.
That's where the Shirkies lived, and that's where the seniors lived. And
uh-huh.
then facing that, and then to the right was where the Congregation Church was, and then St. Margaret's Hall, which is the music house, and that's where the little children stayed.
All right. Now that would have been the original Akeley home.
That's right. And it was called Blanche Hall because Mr. Akeley's daughter had named Blanche, and so that was called Blanche Hall.
And that would have been located about on the front lawn of the City Hall
that's
today.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was an archway going into the side of the home. It was very attractive, Victorian house,
mm-hmm.
very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
The boys that used to, well, it had been coming out, Arnold Smith and Bud Vinn used to love to carry trunks up there so they could see what the Akeley girls looked like. They were so desirable because they didn't know them, you know, didn't see them close.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Sure.
And the girls, as I said, they found me sure he's finally changed it until Monday because then they weren't so bothered because every afternoon the girls took a walk two by two. And she owned some property over in the North Shore.
Mm-hmm.
She was the second house over there. And
now is it Yerkes you're talking about?
Yerkes,
now
yeah.
who she was a
she
teacher?
Was,
or?
Yeah, no, she was the principal.
Oh, I see.
Miss Mary Helen Yerkes and Miss Susan Hill Yerkes were their sister.
Okay.
And her sister Miss Susan Hill taught Latin and French. Miss Mary Helen taught German, but most of it she just did administrative work.
Huh.
I have to tell you a story about her. I think I did tell that down from the museum girl about Miss Yerkes one time used to walk with Mademoiselle every afternoon. And they spoke German sometimes, and they were, this is during the war, and they were aware of somebody in a tree behind them. They could not quite understand it. Finally, one day, Miss Yerkes got word, and they come down to the post office. Federal agents were down there,
oh.
and she was heard to be speaking German. So so she told me, she said, I put on all my VAR pins and all the stripes, stars and stripes I had. She said, no one else in town had so many. I said, I went down there, what was all this nonsense about? Well, this fellow had said they were speaking German, so we decided the two of them were spies. And that's how ridiculous that was.
Isn't that something? That was the First World War, of course.
But Akeley had a assembly room, and two lovely grand pianos in it. In fact, one of those pianos is presently in our parish house. When Akeley closed, it was given to the Women's Club, and then the Women's Club, when that was changed, they gave it to our church, so it's there. But there were two beautiful grand pianos. And Edward McDowell, who was a famous composer, his wife played recitals here, and people used to look to AP for lectures and things of that sort. It was a very nice outlet, because that's before the days of many speakers coming and sharing it with the public, you know. And young people also, some of them took French and German there. I know that Rob Heap and Jane Heap, Mr. Heap's children, went there for French.
Now, Rob is a boy.
Rob, yes.
So boys were allowed.
Well, they were there just, they just went out after hours just to take French for German. Not ever in a class. And one thing I will say about Akeley, if I didn't learn them at home, which I did, but I hadn't learned them at home, was manners.
Oh, yeah.
When Miss Sherkies came in the room, we stood up. And we said, yes, Miss Sherkies, no, Miss Sherkies. And there were no two ways about it. And that's I've always been grateful to her, because she, all the niceties that you learned at home were reinforced at school.
Yeah. And table, you ate there.
Well, the girls who ate there, I didn't eat there very often, but once in a great, great while. If the weather, this seems so silly, if the weather were very stormy, and you know where I live, my mother would call up and ask to keep the girls overnight to walk home from Akeley to our house. This was a big deal. I hate to tell this because it sounds so utterly absurd, but that's the way I was brought up.
Sure.
And
so you had your pajamas or whatever.
They probably were brought over to us by somebody. I don't remember the mechanics. It does seem so absurd when I think about it. My mother had always led a very cultured, or I shouldn't say that.
Proper life.
Proper life. That's the way she'd been brought up. During Lent, the girls would say collect money for their mite boxes, which was for presiding bishops from the world relief, something like that.
I see.
If they spilled on the tablecloth, they'd have to cover it with a penny. So you see, you learn good manners that way.
Isn't that something? That's pretty clever.
Yeah, it is clever.
And that penny then went into
the mite boxes.
Interesting.
When Valentine's Day, Bishop McCormick, who was a bishop when I was there, now he was head of our diocese, which is, included the Skeen to the north and South Haven, I guess, to the south. I've forgotten. But anyway, and he wouldn't be interested in all that business. But the bishop would arrive on Valentine's Day, and Bishop McCormick, who married Jean and me later on, and his daughter Virginia would come for Valentine's Day. And it was just if Columbus had arrived, practically, the attention was given to the bishop was coming for Bishop's Day in Virginia. We went all out to put on little skits and all kind of things to show how well the school was doing. We were the first ones to have a domestic science department in town. And we had great big aprons that we had to make and sewing, and then we had our classes there. And as I say, French and German were available, which they were not in the public schools.
Was Latin mandatory?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. 4 years of Latin, positively. Yes, sir. And I think Miss Susan Hill was capable of teaching Greek, though. And she didn't, but I think she would have been capable of doing that.
Gee. Now, you've mentioned, I've heard the name Wilkinson, Gillespie, and now you're adding McCormick.
Well, Bishop McCormick succeeded Bishop Wilkinson. Bishop Wilkinson. Bishop McCormick. Dr. Wilkinson was a local rector, and he and Mrs. Wilkinson were head of the school. Bishop McCormick came down for Valentine's Day. It was his birthday. It was the school school used to honor Bishop McCormick. He would come with his daughter Virginia. At that time, when I went to school, the Mrs. Yerkes had charge of it.
I see.
Dr. Book was in the town, but not here. And then Mr. Hume Muskegon was very helpful to my father in giving money at times for funds for Akeling. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Robbins was too. My father was always soliciting things like that for me.
Oh, sure.
As I say, we had a basketball team. My sister was a great basketball player. I wasn't very good at it. But we had a gym on the third floor, or fourth floor, I forgot what it was now, because the dining room was above ground. That was the lowest level. And we used to play the high school once a year, and they always beat us because they had much better facilities than we did, much larger court. But we tried.
And these were girl teams,
oh,
exactly.
Yes. And everyone wore long black stockings and bloomers, great knee bloomers, and white mini blouses, which we wore to gym always. We changed into those.
Uh-huh. So there must have been, locker facilities. Or
Oh, yes, there were. There were on the third floor was where St. James. Excuse me, I won't talk too
okay.
long.
All right. Have a phone call. Well, now, you came here to...
11.
So you attended that for...
Until I went away to college, yes.
So it would have been
through high school.
Uh-huh.
And then some girls would stay and take a postgraduate course for another year if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Why did I always think it was just a college prep school for 10th, 11th, 12th grade?
I don't know, because there were kids down there in the lower grade, not kindergarten, because they would have been boarding pupils, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But I think from the 6th grade on, there was always a teacher that took care of the little grades.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many in the school?
Well, I'm going to say around 50. I'm not sure the numbers.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay. And most of those boarded, right?
Oh, yes,
there.
All the board, except my sister Kathleen and Helen Huddy in town.
Mm-hmm.
And Virginia Rose temporarily. I can't think of any other local friends unless they went up there, as I say, especially for French or German or dancing. We had this Calla Travis from Grand Rapids who had a school of dance in Grand Rapids, and she was very well known throughout the state. Margaret Watson Zierlein used to be one of her pupils, and they used to come to the Miss Calla Travis used to come down to Akeley and give dancing lessons.
Sure, I heard that name.
Yes. And we would have Miss Yerkes would sit on a platform, and when we would have a dance there, we always marched two by two up to the platform. And before we had a dance, we'd have a grand march of just the girls, and we would arrive at the platform. Our head was a good evening, Miss Yerkes, and she would say good evening to us, and we'd separate, and then we'd start to dance.
Huh.
And
very formal.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't bad.
Uh-huh.
I tell you, some of those ideals that were of customs that were engraved in my memory are not always easily discarded, and I look at some of the people in the way some children go out now, and I wish they'd had a little experience being trained by Miss Yerkes, because, as I say, if you went anywhere, no matter where you went, if you did what she told you to, you were never criticized for having bad manners, because she was particular about that.
Mm-hmm.
And not that they weren't particular from my home, but they were.
Did they eat at the table with you?
Yes. Well, I can't remember about that. I think a teacher was at every table,
because
there were several tables. And so I don't remember enough about that to know.
I should imagine that table manners were...
Well, they were.
Very.
They were. If you didn't know them at home, you learned them there.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, no such thing as a cigarette had ever been invented at that time, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
Her home in the Miss Susan Hill, built the house on Lake Avenue, and I don't know, can't remember who lives there now, that great big house that has... cement blocks up in front of it across.
Oh yes, across from Bill Creason's house.
Miss Susan Hill, and she built that as a Roman villa originally.
Hmm.
And And
now, who was Miss Hill?
Miss Susan Hill was Miss Mary. See, we always thought Miss Mary Helen was it. Miss Yerkes was the principal. Miss Susan Hill was her sister, who was the assistant principal.
Okay.
And Miss Susan Hill, Yerkes, built the house there.
I see. That is interesting that you differentiated, but they were both Yerkes.
Yeah, they're both Yerkes sisters, maiden sisters. Sisters. Uh-huh.
But Susan Hill, so that must have been a family name.
A family name, yes, yes. Two names. And she studied in France. Miss Mary Helen has received part of her education in Germany. They were both very, were both beautifully educated.
Mm-hmm.
I had teachers there from King, some from the best schools that were educated. I mean, the teachers were, you know. She had a very Mademoiselle Rolande, who came from the Netherlands originally, R-O-L-L-A-N-D-E-T, originally high school, the French name. Mm-hmm. She taught French and German. Well, I can't. I'm going over. Well, Miss Yerkes would sometimes announce, if it was a rainy day or something like that, she would say that we were going to have donuts sent up from the bakery at recess, something like that.
Uh-huh.
We would have maybe cider and donuts during recess. This was a great big deal. There were friezes along Roman friezes along the assembly hall.
Oh.
And they were given, when it was, it was torn down, they were given to the public school, the central school. I don't know what ever happened to them. But they were a very nice thing. They were about this, maybe all the way around the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Mm-hmm.
They were, the whole atmosphere was one of, I think, of refinement and education.
It must have been.
It was. We had an art teacher. She taught sculpturing. Mm-hmm. And as well as painting, all of the course now on a very small scale because it was a small school, and it was never a wealthy school, but lots of her graduates went on to you know good colleges and so forth, passed exams and so forth and so on.
Now, you stayed there probably until 1917, about.
Yes, yes. And then I went away to college.
Those were war years, which that didn't bring an end to the school, did it?
Oh, no. That's the time, you see, when Miss Yerkes and Mademoiselle were investigated because of
Of course, you mentioned it. Yes, that's right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes,
and Mademoiselle, that's what you called Susan Helen.
No.
Or Susan Hill, I should
it was
say.
Mademoiselle Louise Rolande.
Oh.
Miss Susan Hill Yerkes and Miss Mary Helen Yerkes.
Okay.
There were three on the staff, you see.
Mm-hmm.
With other teachers, too. Art teacher and the grade school teacher and several others, you know.
Sure.
Those were the three stationary ones, it seemed to me.
Because you must have had the basic English, history, arithmetic.
Oh, yes. That's right. Definitely.
Uh-huh.
There was a movie company here one time, and they were out Sheldon Road, and they were going to be a movie capital of the world.
Sure.
They took a couple of scenes in our old home, but they also took our class. I guess, we were on the front steps, and they took movies of us all.
Oh boy!
The front step. I don't know what happened to that all, but that was an exciting time.
Well, sure, just to have a camera pointed at you
why
in those
sure.
days, why,
why
that
sure.
was...
And, of course, I have a picture of myself in my graduation dress, maybe, with a white dress and lace and embroidered and all kinds of things in it. Very important dress that you had. And then I wore a white veil, and because we were going to chapel, see, we always had our heads covered.
Oh, yes.
By the St. George's Chapel, we always wore mortarboards.
Well, did you?
Oh, yes. In the old days, they don't do it now, but in the old days in the Episcopal Church, always women's hair was covered.
Oh.
You never went to church without a hat. Ever,
I see.
Ever.
Uh-huh.
And so when we went to chapel, which we had chapel every morning, 8 or 8:30, I've forgotten, 8:30, I suppose, and Kathy and I were always accompanied to school by several boys who lived in the neighborhood, in our neighborhood. They were always so intrigued, not by us, but by Akeley. So they would come before the public school started and walk us over to school. You know, I can't imagine why Akeley seemed so desirable to them. They're so far.
This was kind of their public duty to help you to school. Another phone call. Oh, do you? Yes.
That's an event.
Well, of course.
I mean, yeah, and I'm not denigrating, but you have to make an appointment with her. Instead of the last, Alice Erickson, I went to see her. Where was she? She got Mary Harvey's. We didn't call ahead of time. It was terrible. You know, we shouldn't have called. So Eleanor Smith made a date with her. So we have to.
Okay. Now, is Eleanor Smith, is this Deary?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Deary.
Yeah. Now, what was I saying? The boys going to,
to
school. And when there were dances, they allowed two or three boys to come, but they were only boys who took dancing lessons. And Jean took dancing lessons over there, and my brother did too. But those were the only ones who were there.
This is Jean, your husband?
Yes. As I say, some of it all seems so early Victorian to me now, but that's the way.
Well, sure.
That's the way it was.
Well, it was Victorian. You know that.
And it wasn't all bad. But that at the same time, when I think about how some of the young people act and their attitudes and all today.
I know what you mean.
With respect to older people.
Mm-hmm.
And as I told you, we always stood up when we should have been. Always.
Mm-hmm.
Or any of our teachers. We did.
And any adult or anyone that was older than you, I suspect, was a Mrs. or a Mr.
Oh, yeah. Never called anybody a first name. Ever heard of. In fact, I'm flabbergasted today sometimes when I see someone I've never even seen before. And they go, it's my first. If I go to the doctor's office and I hear someone say, Olive, I had this happen. I'm taking the self tape. I don't want to put
okay.
the
self tape. Okay. All right. Yeah, it is a fine line, you know.
It's your relationship with people is so different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, your contacts with them, but see some you've never even seen before.
Yeah, then it's more, I think you're right. It's proper to.
I
had one come up the other day. I had met the new commander of the your day, Escanaba, but it is now the Acacia.
Yeah.
And it is Jim Dwyer.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And Jim and his wife, and my wife, Daddy, had talked and we had met and so forth. Well, I had an occasion to call him. And I called him at the boat.
Now, you should never say that.
At the ship.
Right.
At the ship, exactly. And so then I was torn. Now, do I call him Captain? Do I call him Sir? Because after all, he's on station.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I ventured forth and called him Jim, but I think it was a mistake.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Until you got to know him socially.
Well, because he was in another position.
Yes.
He was aboard ship, and he was in command at that point.
Yeah,
and perhaps, now I guess maybe that's what I'm relating that to the doctor sort of thing.
Well, yeah. My husband was up north with Doc Marlin, who was ahead of the skipper of the Escanaba, and they were driving someplace or other, and someone then up at Traverse City.
Mm-hmm.
And a sailor came up, was drugging top, and he came up to the car and said to Doc, that was his name, sailor, and Doc said, don't you call me sailor. Oh, he bawled him out terribly, you know, because he was an enlisted man. It was a great division between enlisted men and the officers.
Oh, of course,
yes.
Absolutely.
And this sailor had called the captain of the ship, sailor.
But did he have a uniform on?
Yes.
Oh,
he was directing traffic, and yes.
Oh, that's very improper.
But he could always, I was furious. And I can see where you have to have that distance. Of course, he had his own mess on the Escanaba, too. He never ate with the other officer, either.
Is that right?
Ship.
Now, what was his name again?
Mauerman. It was Perkins.
Yes.
And Mauerman. We knew those two very well socially. In fact, I'm still in contact with Mauerman's daughter.
that would have been 34.
Well, when the Escanaba first came in, it was in 31, because I was in the hospital and my son Dick was born. And someone came to the, one of the nurses were going down to see the Escanaba kid come in. And none of us had ever heard anything about the Coast Guard. They heard about the life-saving station, that was it.
Uh-huh.
And they all had gotten about that, and I said, well, we're really all excited about it, you know, a life-saving little thing coming in. Uh-huh. I really wanted to go down and see it come in.
Uh-huh.
Little did I know that later on, those skippers, and three of them, were to become real intimate friends of ours.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of them went to our church, belonged to our St. Elizabeth's Guild. I don't know how, because some of them weren't all Episcopalians, but I knew them in other capacities, too. And so they add a lot to the community. And Judan and Charlene were especially close to Perkins, very close to Perkins.
Mm-hmm.
We were especially close to Marvin's. But it was awfully nice when we had that ship here. And a real sad day when 65 men, you know, 8 officers.
Sure.
That was quite a comfort to have in the town.
You bet.
And,
there had not been a ship here other than a lifeboat.
That's right, that's uh-huh. right.
That was
and I didn't, as I say, I'd never heard of the Coast Guard. No one had it. Well, I mean, you know, in my circle, I never heard of it mm-hmm. until, because it's always a life thing. You say, oh, I should say this. Put this on tape. And
okay.
The way I've got that, is on tape now?
Yes.
Oh, right. Lord, I should say
oh, well, we're just chatting.
But yeah. then you delete some of the things that I said. No, this is unfair. Sue for plagiarism. When a big deal, Miss Susan, no, Miss Mary Helen, brought a cottage, it was the second cottage on the North Shore, and it was we announced that we were going to go over to the North Shore for the afternoon, so after school.
Would that be the one that the Caldwells now own?
I know the Caldwells, but I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know. I can't displace which one the Caldwells, I know them, but I can't displace where. It was not too far from the Coast Guard station. Well, no, it was the first, well, it was close to face the lake.
Lake, yes.
Yeah. It was a big kind of square cottage.
Well, they had a place that they called Camp Wahoo.
That may have been.
And I always had the idea that it had been a camp for girls.
Oh, I think maybe there was a camp over there. I think the girls did have a camp over there. I think they did. I guess that may not be in here, but I'll just see if that's in there about that. Well, here's an awful lot about, more about this that I didn't realize about it. Well, and I always said, oh, we would go down. We would walk down to the river,
uh-huh.
across from the life-saving station, and the lifesavers would come across in their boat in a quarter apiece, and they would take us across the river.
Oh, is that right? They did charge
them.
They
said quarter apiece.
Uh-huh.
And we would go over there and have a perfectly delightful picnic and on the beach and all.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you must understand that when we all wore our midi blouses and our skirts, and then when we were doing having them. In gymnastics, we wore great big bloomers and black stockings and shoes. Yes.
Now that the Coast Guard station, of course, was on the north side.
Yes, that's right.
And right. What did you do? You hailed them? Yeah, you shouted? Or
yes, or maybe the sheriff would call ahead. I don't know, but they'd send a boat over.
Uh-huh.
They would have a weenie roast on the beach.
Over on her beach, mm-hmm. or where mm-hmm. her cottage was.
Yes, yes, yes. No, that was just an extra thing that she had.
Mm-hmm.
Now here I have this, but this is also, you know, I hate to repeat it, but anyway, I must get it in from here.
Uh-huh.
Many local people received their musical education in the school under the instruction of Miss Elizabeth Hatfield, a graduate of the Boston Conservatory of Music, who is also a well-known figure in Grand Haven. Miss Calla Travis of Grand Rapids is known throughout the Western Michigan as his most celebrated dance instructor, gave weekly lessons in the assembly room. Several children came to Aiken for gymnastics, and more than a few tutored in French and German under Mademoiselle Rondé. The domestic science, well, I guess I've said this, the domestic science department also has an out pupils, quote, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Concerts by the young Leo Sowerby, now a nationally known organist, and by Mrs. Edward McDowell, wife of the composer, these and other affairs drew capacity crowds. Aiken girls were known for their uniform as a kind of Peter Thompson, and they often evoked favorable comment as they were out on their afternoon walks or marching into church. These uniforms came from the Peterborough Locust Factory, located upstairs in the present Masonic building. Several became members of the church choir, but they were carefully chaperoned to and from school. And boys used to write notes in the prayer books or in the hymnals. But boys, we had an awful lot of young boys come to the Episcopal Church in those days because they were sitting in the back row, which the Aiken girls always acted by the two front pews and at the side. They'd march in two by two. But they might find their prayer books over in the hymnals. A little note from boy was sitting in the back. It was a very much skullduggering.
Clandestine.
Oh, yes. And I'm sure Monsieur Q was aware of every single bit of it. You
know, it probably was. Oh, sure.
And they never had went out and had a date or anything of that sort whatsoever, of course. Never, never, never.
The Yerkes did not.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, the girls did.
I see.
Boarders. Except when they'd go home for spring vacation or their Christmas vacation. And when you went home from, there were lots of girls from Chicago and a lot of girls from Indianapolis. The Mission Yerkes had charge of a school in Indianapolis. And so there were girls, as I say, from there. And when the spring vacation or the summer vacation would come, we would all get the local people, local girls, or some of us go to school, I suppose, we would go down and see them off of the boat, going to Alabama, going to Chicago. And all of the day would cry, and we would cry, say goodbye, we wouldn't see them for another year. I don't think kids do that sort of thing though, these days, but we did. We were so innocent and ignorant.
Uh-huh.
But it was not all bad.
Yes. Yeah.
And of course, the girls, there would always be a teacher down there, and the doctor would come down there to yourself, of course. Mr. DeBoe, D-E-B-O-E, had an ice cream store.
Oh, Peter.
Peter DeBoe. And it was a tremendous treat when we were allowed to go down there. The girls, we were allowed to go coming from Grand Haven, but the other girls were allowed to go down in the afternoon and get a soda or Sunday night or something that you guys already do. It was a great treat. Our treats were so simple but so tremendous in their impact, you know. I
wonder why you had mentioned that Institute Hall.
Yeah.
And Hall...
It's A.P. Hall, but people would call it, local people would call it an institute. And I don't think in any of their, in their literature, their catalogs, institute's never mentioned. It's always
Hall.
It's always A.P. Hall.
Yeah,
I
noticed.
Local people would say call it institute, and that was incorrect.
Now, Hall, and I'm just trying to understand the connotation Hall.
Well, like
because
Bexley Hall, Rosemary Hall, lots of boarding schools are named Hall.
Yes, right, they are.
That's why that was named that.
Yeah, and I wonder if it does denote a prep school.
Yes, it does.
I suspect it does, yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that in the Final Four of the basketball coming up, Michigan and Illinois are two, but Seton Hall.
Seton Hall, yes. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always mean that it doesn't always mean a boarding school. It may mean a college too.
Mm-hmm.
It may mean a seminary like Bexley Hall, an Episcopal seminary in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
So the name Hall is for one funny Mr. Heath lived across the street from us, Lionel Heath.
Right here.
Yeah,
is that right?
That house,
oh, I didn't know that.
And he was a remarkable person. You know, he had to use two canes. He was a two crutches, I guess it was. No, two canes. He was in the paralysis. He was a remarkable person, probably the most intellectual person that's ever been in Grand Haven, as far as I know. Very left-wing over people.
I've heard that.
But really, it was ridiculous, some of the things that he was considered probably a communist, you know. This was so silly. But they were, Mr. Heath, and William Heath lived in, or had William Heath's son here. He came from Muskegon. When my father first came to Grand Haven, before he moved to Lizzie Watson's boarding house, he lived in the hotel, and he always told Mr. Lowry in later years, the first person who ever invited me into their home was William Heath in Muskegon. Well, Lionel, as I say, was his son. He graduated from the Sorbonne at that time, and gained the highest honors any American had ever had at the Sorbonne. During the war one time, and Jean was, I don't know how old he was, 10, 11, something like that. Well, two men came to the front door. I was upstairs, and they said, we're from the FBI, we want to come in. And Jean, of course, had heard about the FBI, didn't know much about, so he called me in. What in the world is this all about? So I said, you know, you go upstairs. And they came in and wanted to know whether or not Mr. Heath read the Daily Worker. And I said, I don't know whether he does or not, but I know this. And Mr. Heath reads the Daily Worker. He'll take it out in his front lawn. He'll hold it up and he'll read it. And to hell, we didn't say this, but I meant to hell with anybody else, but he read it not, you know. And
he was no longer mayor, of course, by then.
He may have been. He may or may not have been mayor. I probably not. I kind of forgot. I just don't remember about that. But he was suspected. Miss Julia Sowell, the Sowell family. She went to Grand Rapids, and I thought, when he was mayor, one thing he wanted was to put an underground sprinkling system in all the city parks and have them turn down the city hall. At that time, it wouldn't cheap to have done. They wouldn't have to have people go around and sprinkle on, you know. People, that was just a regular communist idea.
Isn't that
idea.
Something,
yes. Oh, yes. This is a terrible red idea, you know.
Now, that was way before his time.
Oh, yes. And when he was going to run, Dick Cook was going to run against the mayor. Mr. Heath was mayor, and Dick Cook was going to run against him. I think that's... Yeah, Mr. Heath was going to run against Dick. I forgot which one. But anyway, Dick Cook called me up and he said, may I please... And I was in charge of... I was an active in the women's club in that area at the time. May I speak after Mr. Heath, because he is going to charge me with all kinds of things, and I want to be able to answer his charges. And I said, well, what do you mean? I'm thinking he must have been an income. Well, he said that he's going to tell people that one time I played strip poker, and I don't know what all it was. Well, I was amused, kind of astonished, and I said, so I asked Mr. Heath, I don't care what I speak for, so that doesn't bother me what he's been. So, Mr. Heath got him. Dick Cook got all these answers and all the challenges Mr. Heath, the things of slander he was going to say about it. Mr. Heath got up and talked about a book that just come off the University of Chicago Press that he thought everybody should read. It had nothing to do with being mayor at all. Dick Cook was simply defeated. He didn't know what to say.
Stole his speech.
Yes. Yes. Mr. Heath made a great contribution to the town. In a cultured way, they might invite you over there for Sunday night supper. Now, they were older than we were, but they might. Mm-hmm. And you might have a cup of tea and a bread and butter sandwich.
And that would be dinner?
Well, supper, afternoon tea.
I see.
You wouldn't think anything about it, especially the one. Yeah. And he used to work in his yard. He used to sit on the ground and go around weeding the grass all over there. And they owned way back then. Back in the month, you know, and so forth. They changed things in the house. They had a lovely bust in the house that Jane, his daughter, took. She went to Jane went to Smith. Rob went to Harvard. And I think they were both 5'8". Mm-hmm. And then Jane married a professor, and Rob was an architect. They both died, but they both had the had successful careers.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Rob Heath having gone to school.
Mm-hmm.
To the
he would come over on Saturdays.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And have French lessons with James, uh-huh, because they felt they weren't getting French and they wanted to have that experience.
Sure.
Because they spoke French in their home too.
Uh-huh. So
they were very unusual people. People were afraid of them because they didn't understand them, I think, which would amuse Mr. Heath very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe he can say or do something that he wouldn't ordinarily have done, you know. But I think he made an impact when he was mayor.
Well, he absolutely did.
Yes. And my father, who had known his father, and Lionel's mother had been born in Dublin, and she was a beautiful woman, attractive woman. I used to, when I was at home, with this woman. Because she would call, my father called Lionel up and he said, Lionel, just look over for a few months, I want to speak to you about something. And one time I said, why, you shouldn't say that to Mr. Heath. He has come on two canes. And my father never said, because Mr. Heath never hesitated about going anyplace.
Mm-hmm.
You never thought about it being a cripple. I, being young, you see, thought it was terrible. My father and Mr. Heath thought, let him hop over there. My father probably bawled him out for something he'd done or hadn't done, you know, but it was a good relationship or not. Maybe you see eye to eye about many things.
Sure.
But, and the Yerkes were friends of the Heaps.
Oh, is that right?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Now, they were still, how long did the Akeley, you said they were friends, did it, was it still going in the 30s?
And yeah, yes. Let me see if I have anything here when Akeley posed.
The other thing, while you're looking, you had mentioned the women's club.
Yes.
Was there a relationship there? I just wondered. If,
the women's club? When there would be lectures, they sometimes would be held in the, you see, the Unitarian Church was the one that the women's club used. When that closed, that was the building that the women's club used. And if it was a larger crowd, then they would go up to Acre because there was a bigger assembly hall up there to meet in. But they had a pleasant relationship between the two of them.
And it would seem you still have the Tuesday Musicale here.
Yes, the Tuesday Musicale never meets on Tuesday. Yes, it's still going. But it hasn't been on Tuesday for years, as far as I know.
Is that an offshoot of Akeley, or what, is that something entirely separate?
I think it's entirely separate, I think. Now, this is something that I have just saw here. I think about Akeley, too, and I've forgotten. This is about our church. During the young people church, derived most of their interest at the church and the entertainment of the church. The guild room was the scene of many a party. The pot-bellied stove mood never interfering with dances, costume party. The river boat, May Graham, often carried the Sunday school, its teachers and possibly a few stowaways, to May Graham Park on the Grand River near Spoonville for annual picnic, and memories would only be of a perfect day. Picnic lunches at the park, snacks on board, and building romances, budding romances, made the trip memorable. See, the May Graham really played a big part in people's lives here. I can remember Jean's mother and aunt going down. They would go to friends would get together, go to May Graham, go to the river for an afternoon. They'd get picnic lunch.
Yeah.
And this is Akeley, you see, would be a... Well, no, this is from the church. I'm excluding that. We're from the church. Now I'm looking to see when Akeley goes here. Well, financial difficulties, well, the private trying to replace aging Yerkes, so as opposed to the school in 1926.
Oh, in 26?
Farewell service, the farewell to Akeley took place. The Bell Telephone Company bought a lot in 1929 for $13,000, and in 1933, the main of the property was purchased by the city for $18,000.
That's about the time that Heap was mayor, too.
Yeah. Both at Chapel Friends. Well, I'm not sure about that. I don't know. He was mayor after that, but he was mayor after I was married.
So was it?
Yes, of course I was married when this little school closed. Both at Chapel Friends, it was given to St. John's and one of these things, and so forth and so on. The church's original small altar was replaced by the one Mrs. Wilson had given to St. George in memory of Mother. This altar is now used in Grace Church, Ludington. And the smallest, but they use in St. Michael's and all ages in the Lee Township when there was a mission. Okay. Well, this is the soul fanning were important people in town. Yes, I believe this is about once about St. Margaret, St. Agnes Guild, I mean, they worked for anyway, one time they raised $110 to paint the church. This Mary Soul, organist and choir director, was beloved by all the young. Her fudge on Unita biscuits and her cocoa, but most of all her colorful sense of honor, humor, and understanding, made her home and her choir a mecca for all. She was known for wielding a handy poker with the town to fly all over with it, or so it seemed. Well, that's all about our church. And we had St. John's sponsored the first Boy Scout group.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Harry Kirk was a member of our church. And my father, and I think Mr. Johnson bought the property. down there, indeed, at the Kirk Park.
Oh,
yes, Mr.
Well.
J.F. Johnson, Mr. William Butler, probably the scout camp now known as Camp Kirk. Mr. Hatton loved to drive down, visit the boys and sample Harry Heath apple pie. Oh, dear.
You mentioned the soul. There was a soul.
There's a soul. Well, I tell you, you know Peg Bidding, Peg Bidding.
Yes, well, that's
okay.
It.
Yeah, okay.
Was she a soul?
Her first husband was Bud.
Bill Bidding.
Bill Bidding.
Uh-huh.
But his real name was Soul Tryon. One turned out like a friend.
Yes,
Soul Tryon was his name. And I remember he was baptized, my brother was a godfather. And his mother, Miss Lila Soul, she always called him Miss Lila Soul, Miss Mary Soul, Miss, you never called him, you never called him Miss, mm-hmm. Miss Lila, would not name her child such a bad, for her first name, Soul. So when they said name this child, the father spoke up and said Soul Tryon. Then he was called Bill Bidding. But he was all, he was never called Soul Tryon.
Didn't
but he
know
was never
that.
Called Soul.
Never heard that.
Called Bill.
Isn't that something?
And Judge Soul, they lived on Lafayette Street, not very far from where Jean's parents lived, across the street. The house was awful and all. But that's, and then Ed Soul, one of the sons, was a lawyer, and he had the first farthest out house on Sheldon Road, had a farm out there. He was a lawyer who wasn't very successful. There were two sisters, Miss Mary Helen, and not Miss Mary Helen, Miss Mary Soul, and Miss Judith Soul. And they were very fine people. Miss Mary Soul was very active, and as I say, in our church, and she was a chaperone. She couldn't be there went any place without a chaperone. Or Mrs. Edwards didn't like that. And we went to a little door. You know, you'll think it. I'm 88 and a half. You know, mm-hmm. If you think if I said I'm 288, you'll believe it. When we went out to Howland Park to dance with the Vivian, we always had a chaperone. And you might take the trolley car out there 5 cents. Mm-hmm. And the boys would tune you that out and dance and you'd come home.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you went out in the afternoon, the big thing in the afternoon was your Sunday walk, you weren't chaperoned. That was the boys. We'd walk out the lake, and you know, the girls would say, well, let's walk the lake. We'd always kind of see the boys, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
And one time, Betty Ellis, her, she came here. She came to Grand Haven before I did. Her family did.
What was her maiden name?
Terry. Terry Beach, you know. Betty Bullock, she was, but her mother was a Terry. Terry, there is Terry Beach.
The Terry Hills,
Terry
still out there. Yes.
And one time my brother, we had a house party at Freddie's cottage, just before I was married, but I met him in college. And Julian was on the streetcar going out with John Luke. And there was a young man there, and he needed one more boy, and he asked him when he was doing that, and he said, how would you like to come along and go to this party? So the young man was plucked off the streetcar at the party. You know, our entertainment was so simple, so meager, so that we would. I don't know why I started this, but we were before today.
No.
With the boys and girls, my mother died when I was 16, and he would always, and my brother was very protective of us, and we went and learned all about it, and my father was very strict about it. He didn't care how many people we had at our house. He was always asking, don't you want to come and visit the girls or come over and so forth. But anyway, a big evening would be someone would say, my sister made out, Kathleen, why don't you make some fudge? Oh, I don't want to make fudge. Well, anyway, she decided to make it. Now, that was a big evening. Go in the kitchen, make fudge, and make taffy and pull it.
Uh-huh.
And the boys,
sure.
That would be a collective date.
Uh-huh.
And we would have just a whirl.
Isn't that something, though?
Yes.
Yeah.
When I was asked to go on a date one time by a young man here who was very attractive. He used to work for me at the time. He was the head of a gas company. And I was probably 17, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, I don't know, 23, I don't know, But he asked me to go to movies. And I thought I could go to the first show. But at 9 o'clock, I had to come right straight home after.
Now, which theater did you go to?
To the Grand Theater.
Grand, okay. Robin Hood was there, though.
And Robin Hood came later from that. Yeah, it was the Grand Theater down near the, not near the old hotel in there. That's where the first, it was a, I think it's called Outdoor and
Mountain. Oh, sure, the Vaudeville area.
Yeah, yes. Then I kind of went down to Robin Hood at that time, yes.
Uh-huh.
And many years later, long after he was married, I saw that man. I used to know growing up, he was moved away. He used to take me on dates. We were down to Robin Hood. He said, I used to look at that clock. It was 7 to 9. He had to go home after 9 o'clock. So mm-hmm. he did too.
Mm-hmm.
He'd wonder, he dared ask me if he could hold my hand.
Mm.
And he was to watch that clock, and it would get to be 9 o'clock, and he hadn't dared do it.
Uh-huh.
Now, you don't know people like me, do you? Never
well, now, you know, it didn't change much when we were going together. That was pretty much it, too. Uh-huh. I think a little. Things that had escalated down some, though. By the time you were 16, perhaps, you were bold enough to hold a hand.
Oh, no. It was around 16, 17 years before I went to college that this would happen.
Isn't that something? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where'd you go to school, to college?
Well, my brother, after a little history, my brother had gone to Harvard. And he wanted me to go to Wellesley.
Mm-hmm.
My mother just died in May, and I was going to college that fall. And anyway, through influence of other people, I went to Ann Arbor first, and I loved Ann Arbor, but then I transferred to Wells, and that's where I got that.
I see.
Wells is my alma mater.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I have a granddaughter who, unbeknownst to me, applied and went there. She was a magical mom, and by the time I
was there. Isn't that something? At Wellesley.
Catherine Swain, yes.
Oh, yes. Sure.
And I have two granddaughters and all of them happened to go. But Gene went to Lehigh, my Gene.
Oh, yes.
And then he went to Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So I've written Michigan not very long. I guess in the last month or so. I still get pleas for money, and I write back and I say that all his life he supported his alma mater, but I can't do it. I got my own. We used to do it together, you know. But
sure.
I can't.
Right.
And Ann Arbor now and Wellesley too.
Right.
And
other
things coming on you want to support.
Yeah.
But you know something about now you're a great college person, that old private schools have an advantage over public school, basically. As soon as you arrive, you are made unconsciously, because I don't remember any acting, you're made conscious of what you were inheriting from what people had done before.
Mm-hmm.
So the freshman class, always took out, they did it at Harvard too, they took out an insurance policy that was to come due, I can't remember when they graduated, or 25 years or something like that. You a very small amount you were asked to pay in, so be your class's gift to the college. Now that was a smart idea, wasn't it?
Well, now that would be, it would be a life insurance policy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And on your death, it would pay.
No. Oh. At the time when you graduated.
Oh.
Yes, at the time, as I've got. Because you only, as I remember, you only paid when you were in college.
Mm-hmm.
A very small amount.
Sure.
Of it, I forgot. It was very minimal. But I thought that was a very good way to raise, to raise and to make people feel, particularly when you go to a state-supported school.
Yes.
That you have some obligation.
Uh-huh.
You don't, I think when I went down, I was $54 a term.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's something that.
Yes. Well, now that didn't in any way compensate for.
Oh, no.
You know,
absolutely.
No.
That's true today. Even though the tuition has gone up many, many times, there's you don't even come close to paying for your education.
No, you don't. You don't. So, I mean, I think that's a good way to think about it.
Oh, that's
an idea. Well, you're active and come and consider things. Remember that.
That is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. You're making it's a promissory note to an obligation that you are embarking upon. Yeah.
And then I think it's because, you know, when my and Dick went to Harvard, Gene went to Princeton, his brother went to Harvard, when we took him down there, he had a room, and you have to live in the yard the first year, at least you did down there, and this ratty old building, and the bathroom that they used, that group used, was the floor down below. We went downstairs to the bathroom, and potato shower, anything like that. Mm-hmm. Ratty old furniture. Everything was ratty about it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time at Ann Arbor, I can't remember, I'd gone to, they just built a dormitory. But they didn't, they only had Martha Cook when I was there. And one other one, I forgot the other one, the other one. Girls' dormitory. But in, see, people lived in boarding houses. And when, I've got to go back a little bit, when Dick was home, he was going to go to summer school. And I took him down there to find, and I would find a room. And I couldn't find a thing. And one room was shown to us, a room with a double bed in it. He didn't know who his roommate was going to be, some boy. But kind of an attic. But it was perfect. I got the address from the union. It was just shocking. I left Ann Arbor so discouraged, not knowing what to do, because he'd been Harvard, because he didn't belong to the fraternity. And they might have done it over anyway. And I'm on the outskirts of Ann Arbor, and I called Mrs. Weil. Dr. Weil was head of the dermatology department in Ann Arbor. And his son was a roommate of our sons at Cranbrook and at Princeton.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Weil said, well, you go on home, and I'll see what I can do. And I got home to call Mrs. Weil, and she said, I have a friend who would give your son a room for summer school, which he did. And then Joy Woodford, when he went, he went that same place.
No.
But what I'm saying is, the accommodations in those years and before that were very, very poor.
Yeah.
Compared,
you're right.
You know, they were. Mm-hmm. They really were. But now, when they go, they have all these dormitories and much more elegant things than a lot of the private schools have. So I think that they ought to feel the obligation to the state. But that they've educated them.
Yeah. About the only obligation that we have is the obligation to complain about the taxes we pay.
That's right.
And it's those taxes are really what support the education.
Sure they are. Yeah. Sure. And I don't begrudge any tax for proper education, but I think
absolutely.
The students themselves, you don't show the number of people graduating from private schools, and they aren't by any means any wealthy when they get through, those in the public sector by any means, but they feel an obligation to make a gift to that school throughout the year.
I think you're right, yes.
They feel loyal to that school.
Somehow you think that an education in a public school is a birthright.
That's right.
And in a sense it is.
In a sense it is.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly all right to have the state educated. I'm all for public education. I really am. But I don't think they ever feel
what
I felt.
That's true. You're right.
And I think it's unfortunate because I think the schools don't foster that and don't tap that source.
Mm-hmm.
That they should be made to feel that way.
Wouldn't it be remarkable if every person that enrolled at Michigan, which is public, or Michigan State, or any of the public schools, did what you suggested, take out a $10,000 life insurance policy? Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, sure would. Sure would. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They wouldn't feel it?
No. At age 18 or 19, a premium for a policy that size would be a pittance.
That's right.
Yeah. And if that was on their death, went back to the school,
not necessarily on their death, even if they were going to assume other insurance obligations when they got married and all, or to have the choice, as I think it was there, that when they got through school, that would have increased, you see, because so many of them, that would be the total amount. When they graduate, they could give the school that insurance policy.
I see. Yes, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So they didn't have to pay into anymore.
Yeah. You've come up with a good idea.
Well, I don't know. But it's awfully hard. Sometimes it's hard to think of how to get money out of people painlessly, you know.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Now, you went to state, didn't you?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then, if you promise not to tell anyone, I went to Michigan, too.
Oh, did you?
But it's a well-kept secret.
Oh, when did you go there first?
For dental school.
Oh, for dental school.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the state didn't have a dental school, did they?
No, they didn't. No, and still, there are only two in the state, Detroit and University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I was forced into going to the University of Michigan.
You know, when I was in Arbor that year, as I say, I went such a ignorant about sorority and returning. I knew nothing about them, and I would have had a... Am I boring you?
No, no, not at all.
I have a friend in Wheaton, Florida, who's even older. She's 96 this year, and she broke her hip a couple of years ago. She walks 2 miles at least a day now. But she was telling me about going to college. She went to university. She went to Syracuse University. She said she lived in Staten Island. She said, I remember when Mom and Papa took me. We took the night boat to Albany. Now that wouldn't mean as much to you as it does to me, because that's from my origin. The night boat was a big deal. Albany was a big old night. And then we took the train from Albany to Syracuse. Then Papa took me to Sayu House. And I was 15, not quite 16 at the time. And they asked the Sayus if they would take care of me. Well, now, of course, this is unheard of in my day. Now, you wouldn't, you know, you're pretending, you're just only about an attorney. You never, you know, you never made any advance, a girl never made any advance to a fraternity. You just hoped they'd make an advance this way. You never did.
Absolutely.
But anyway, the Sayus promised Papa that they would look after me. And they did, and I married the Sayu.
Isn't that something?
Thank you.
Now, apparently, her dad had been a Sayu.
He'd been a Sayu.
Sure.
Yeah. But now, you know, you would ever do such a thing.
No, you know that. I've never heard of that happening.
No, yeah. I never have either.
Having it.
And when I went to Ann Arbor, I didn't know one fraternity, one sorority from another. I couldn't. I knew nothing about I never knew. There was never a more ignorant. Well, maybe there were. I guess I did meet some people who were equally ignorant as I was.
No, I know what you mean.
But to be, and innocently, and you know, people talk about taking their children down, getting them started school. I took the train down and I by myself. I remember my mother had only lived there a short time, and I led a very sheltered life. I really had. Took the train down there, and I must have taken a cab to the, can't say it right now, but anyway, to the law fraternity, which was turned into a dormitory during the war. Right back in that, well, you were no more.
At Michigan.
Michigan.
Sure.
But I mean,
I
you would know this where this was.
Oh, I see.
Because it's
probably gone now.
Well, it was called Kent Hall. It had been a fraternity. It was a law firm. And what it was, I don't remember. I did know at the time, but I don't know now. But it was called Kent Hall when I was there. It was right back, it was blocked back at the Alpha Del House. And so, anyway, I went on my things, and I got in line to register. And a long line, and there was a girl ahead of me. I can't remember what her name was, I'll make a difference. And she, I realized, was going to be my roommate. Now, I had no idea if it was going to be my roommate. That house had beds in the rooms, and then you didn't, let me see. No. It had, your desks were in the room, and the third floor were all the beds, double deckers.
Oh, yes, sure, the dormitory.
Yeah, the dormitory. It was upstairs. You had no beds in your room. And I just put in the room with this girl. She just repulsed me. She was awful looking. So I left the line and went back to Kent Hall. And I said to the head of the house mother, I said, oh, can I room with... I said, I don't know what room I'm going to have. Kind of want to rehearse it. There was a girl sitting there. And she said, oh, I'm looking for a room here. I want a room here, too. And I said, well... Could she room with me? I never didn't even know her name. And, well, anyway, fixed up. She roomed with me, and she is Phil Franzen's godmother.
I'll be darned! What a coincidence, isn't it?
Isn't that funny?
Now, where does she live now?
She lives in Kalamazoo now. She lives in Minneapolis. But you know, she had and don't pass this on. But she had a very a searing experience. She went there. She knew all about sororities. I knew no one for another. Mrs. Sherwood had been the sorority that I eventually belonged to. And I think sororities and fraternities had a real need in those days for housing. I don't approve of them now, though I belong to one. I believe in the state university, I don't think that's right. Because they have dormitories. But they had to serve a real need. So I went down there, and she, but she knew all about them, and she wasn't good at it. And she never came back the next year. Now this I thought was just so sad.
That is.
Because most of us all got into this world. And I don't know why she didn't. She was a very acceptable girl. And married. And so happily ever after. But
sure.
I, as I say, I got them all mixed up. And the first time I was invited to a Kappa house for a tea or something, I thought this girl invited me because she liked me. She was just asking me over the house for this little person to take with her. I didn't know I was being rushed. It isn't, you don't, my mother was a Victorian, and my grandmother more so. I must have been in that mold much longer than I realized it because I knew nothing about this stuff.
Well, you know, perhaps your innocence was part of your appeal to
them. Well, my innocence and my ignorance. Well, I'll tell you about it, Betty. I'll tell you a story on Betty Alice. If you ever see her, I'm not even going to ask about it. We were sitting around our room one time talking, and Betty came. This is the door, this is where we first, she came out there. She didn't know anything about anything either. One of our good friends came along, pigtails down her back. She cut her hair up. She got to school.
Now, this is at Michigan.
And we were sitting around talking, and Betty came to the door, and she said, what are you talking about? And one girl's voice said, we're telling dirty stories. And Betty said, oh. And somebody said, well, they was, I don't think they have been, and said, you can't come in unless you can tell one. Well, Betty said, I don't know one. And he said, you must have heard one. Well, she had heard one, but it was so awful she needed to repeat it. So in much urging and pushing and kicking together to tell her, it was something like, I don't know, somebody had a great big bonnet, about a bucket, as big as a bucket. I don't know, it had, there was no connotation to it, it was evil at all. So-and-so had a big bucket, well, I don't know, I asked her to tell you something, to tell you the dirty story.
It sure wasn't a dirty story, though.
No, and I had never heard one either. But I knew enough to know that wasn't a dirty story. But the other girls, you know, the juniors and seniors are who are older than
of course. Worldly.
So I'll say to Betty, why don't you tell that dirty story? You see, another girl who was in that group was Mickey. Married to John Reichardt for that last one. He met her, but she was one of our classmates too. But we all, you know, we said there never was such an ignorant, innocent group of girls going to school than we were.
Sure.
And
But by the time you, of course, you didn't graduate from there. You went on to Wellesley.
Yeah.
But as
and
a senior,
when I got to Wellesley, you know, we used to sit around. There was a girl at Ann Arbor at the time, Dorothea Hunderman in Detroit, and she'd gone to Wellesley first, and she'd gone there, and we'd be in our room, and she would goodbye to them. Remember, there, you'll not behave this way, and you're at Wellesley, I can tell you that, we were horsing around, but she meant about studying. So, at Ann Arbor, it's unbelievable. We wore gloves to class. We wore hats to class.
You said, right?
Very particular about the way, because we were dressing for the boys. When we got to Wellesley, it was midi blouses and stuff like that. No boys, that's very informal. It was such a shock to me. And then I've been told that my sorority pin would carry me any place in the world. People would recognize it, you know. And my father gave me a Shriner's pin to wear when I traveled. If I got in trouble, and I was in trouble, a Shriner would come up and he would help me. Remember once, but no one ever said anything. Well, I didn't want them to, but anyway, I got nothing else. So I had to interview the head of all the various departments to see whether my credits, my NIRA, would fly well here now. And so the head of the English department, that I heard that she'd been my sorority in Syracuse. So I wore my pin. I thought, of course, I would have an entree to her. I don't know if she'd give me a handshake or not, but I would, you know, you were a step further along in my quest. She never even mentioned it to me. She saw my pin, and I felt so deflated, so I never wanted to come after that.
It was not the key to success that you thought it might have been.
And the words were, see, Francis Hatton said, the four most democratic years of my life were spent at Vassar College. You didn't know whether your daughter, the girl, was a multimillionaire or she was there on scholarship. Because there's so many girls at those colleges on scholarships. Than there are otherwise, you wouldn't believe it. Doug Baker, you know who he is?
Sure.
Well, Chuck Baker was his brother. And their mother was a kindergarten teacher, I think, or one of our children. We always used to have teacher over dinner sometime during the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Chuck was with his mother, she was a widow. And he said, I said, well, where are you going to go to school? And he said, I don't know. He said, I'd love to go to Harvard, but I couldn't afford it. And I said, well, why don't you ask about scholarships? It was making so mad that local school were not talking about it. He said, I didn't know. And I said, you were fine. He already got a scholarship. He went there, right for a scholarship.
Isn't that something, though?
I talked to the superintendent, and I said, Grand Avenue was saying to me when I go to the other club, why don't you advertise those scholarships, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad,
mm-hmm.
because they're available. So he went through, and graduated, had no problem.
Mm-hmm.
No,
you're right. We consider those schools extremely wealthy.
And that isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And you never, at least what I was done, I can't speak for it now, you never knew the girl who lived next door to me. I have a book that she wrote, but anyway, her mother, packing company, was a Swift. Anyway, there were two big. She lived next door to me. I would never know she had a dime. You know,
mm-hmm.
they because they were not boys friends.
Uh-huh.
That makes an awful lot of difference.
Boys yes.
just come on the weekend, you see, but you didn't dress for the boys.
Uh-huh. Everyone wore the same.
Everyone wore the large. And I didn't wear uniforms or anything. I mean, they didn't have to wear all the no.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't dress for the boys.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in Ann Arbor, we wore hats and veils
sure.
and gloves to class.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure they were proud, of course.
Yes. Isn't that something?
Oh, yes. Yes, uh-huh. we did.
Uh-huh. Well, there must have been a boys' school close by Wellesley.
Well, Harvard, MIT,
uh-huh.
within 20 minutes, half an hour, you see a lot of boys' schools around the
sure.
shore.
Uh-huh.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
No problem about that whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then when I first got there, I remember the class, my class was so, and the whole school was going to listen to a debate. Wellesley was debating maybe Smith, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole class, the whole school turned out to listen to that debate. See, it was rather than a football game, it was a debate.
Isn't that something? Sure, sure. Yeah, well, that was it.
And when one time Harvard played center, now center was a little school in Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
and had a national reputation at that time for football.
Oh, football, yes, right.
And they were playing, mm-hmm. and some boy at Harvard asked me to go to that center game, and I couldn't go because I had Saturday classes. And freshmen
yes,
always yes. has classes, and maybe they don't know,
uh-huh.
always had classes until noon on Saturday.
Isn't
that so? So you didn't go skyrocketing sure. around, so you stayed and studied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you someone who's gone to Wellesley, and I don't know her, except I know her speak to her. She came over to see me. Is Susan Lindquist with Jerry Lindquist.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And you know what kind of nut he is.
Yes.
I don't know. How she got there,
uh-huh.
Unless she had money after her mother died. I think she worked while she was there. But
uh-huh.
she came over to see me, and I applauded her to think the fact that she came from a small town high school. No one urged her to go. I didn't say anything about going.
Uh-huh.
She did on her own. And she got there and was awful glad she'd gone.
She has graduated now?
Uh-huh. And I, as I say, two or three times I called the superintendent and I said, please, not only Wellesley, but I said, please tell the girls
mm-hmm.
about these scholarships that are available.
Thank you, right.
And, but they mm-hmm. are, they're so oriented
to state schools.
To state schools.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't, their horizon is too bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Listen, you've got an appointment this afternoon.
My appointment, let me see, I had an appointment this morning.
Yes.
I got a permit this morning.
Yes.
So now I'm free, but now I'm going to go see afternoon. That's
yeah.
at 2 o'clock.
Well,
I
better, I don't want to,
I hope I haven't shouted out.
Listen, this has been fun.
I don't mean to.
No, this is.
Right. And I'm not a historian, I'm not a.
Well, you've written a book. You've been published.
Well, I that's very, very limited. I know.
Yeah.
I
want to make sure. There must be copies available.
I think the copies are copied down the library.
Yeah.
But I tell you one thing that I learned at Wellesley, that you could have flunked a course on if you didn't acknowledge your source.
Uh-huh.
I remember writing. I think I only kept one of my papers. term papers, you know. And I quoted someone, not accurately, but the thrust of it. And I put down so-and-so, page 143, and the professor wrote page 144. I marked that off and hadn't done it correctly. You never made a statement that wasn't original without crediting your source. So I learned that. So I'm very careful here. If I look at my footnotes here about the source of it, I don't read it on my pronouncement. They're where they came from.
That's very good.
And that's what, you know, what I was taught I had to do.
Do you know that Leo Lilly's book does not have a bibliography? It credits absolutely no one. The entire book?
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
Now, you see, that would have been considered plagiarizing in my
opinion.
It wasn't his fault. I mean, he was asking, and he wasn't, but he should have known.
Well, he's an attorney. Sure.
Was. But, no, that is just, would be unacceptable. I think, of course, there's some reason to know, you know, unless you were profound.
Well, I think that's right.